If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. We're recording this podcast on September 12th on a Thursday. What's going on, Peter? How are you doing?
Not much. I'm fired up as always in my neck of the woods, Boston area. It's starting to get like just a little crisp out in the evening and at night. And I'm a big fan. Baseball season's my favorite, but I am a big fan of the fall. So the fact that it's starting to feel the part is, it's got me a little excited. And Boston College is number 24 in the country, so I'm extra excited.
Yeah, I'm with you on the weather changing. It is also starting to get a little bit cool here in Northern Virginia. I'm a big fan of the fall season in terms of the weather. So it's nice to have it be like 60 degrees in the morning and in the evening. It is very much appreciated. So what have you been working on the last few weeks? For me, it's been a lot of conversations with scouts. We're working on a top 100 update for the 2025 list that will drop at some point next week on the website. If you're listening to this within a day or so of the podcast dropping, that has been a lot of fun. I feel like this time of year specifically is always when I have the biggest information gaps between like my perceptions of players and how the industry views these players. So like closing those gaps is always a very informative process and a very, very fun one. And particularly this year where I just was at fewer events than I normally am for any given year, there's a lot of players that I'm just playing catch up on. And so these conversations this week have been a lot of fun. Also working on some pro stuff that'll be on the website, I think on Friday. So as you're listening to this podcast, just checking into our breakout picks from earlier in the year. But yeah, what have you been up to, Peter?
Yeah, and I think to your point about the rankings that we do, and it's always been like this, I think what makes it so unique is it's a really productive blend of what we see with our eyes and then also cross-checking that with what so many industry sources are seeing and hearing. And all, like, I like to think it's as accurate as can be. So it's fun diving into a whole new class and getting rolling on it, and with the regular updates we'll have out on it. But it's all been, it's really just kind of been transfer portal stuff on transfer portal stuff. I think it's a not so much of a blessing for college coaches and athletes, but it is for someone in my shoes where it's, you know, the possibilities are endless on things you can talk about and touch on. So
yeah,
it's been the top 100 for the portal guys of rankings and reports. And then building that out into a top 10 transfer classes, but then with the sheer volume of transfers, there are going to be some classes that go a little overlooked. And so 2 days ago, Wednesday, I put out 10 of the more underrated transfer classes from this portal cycle. And there are a couple blue bloods. Like, it felt weird saying Florida put together like an underrated class because they're,
they're Florida.
Florida's Florida, but there are a handful, I think eight after that, that were kind of not so powerhouse type schools that put together really, really good classes. So that was interesting to work on as well. And then it's helping you out with the 25 draft and then getting into some recruiting stuff in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, just the amount of movement that happens these days with college baseball definitely adds a lot of like just upkeep you need to do to just keep up with these players. I had some conversations with scouts where they were like, yeah, a lot of my work the last few days has just been updating bios and making sure like all my schools are accurate for these players. And I know who's actually playing for the program this fall, which is, I guess, par for the course. I mean, that comes with the territory of all the transfers. I wonder if the transfer portal makes the game more or less interesting to fans, like people outside of the industry, not coaches, not players, not us who are kind of working in it, but just people who are fans of college baseball, or like the prospect world at large. I wonder if that movement makes it more challenging to follow, or if the movement in and of itself is just like an exciting piece to the college baseball offseason that is almost like winter meetings for the major league game, where you're just kind of talking about trade, talking about where players are moving, roster reconstruction. I'm curious. I'm sure some people like it and some people don't, but I do wonder like what the effect on just the fandom is. Cause I tend to agree with you. Like, I like it personally. I think it's interesting. I think it's fun. But it definitely is a lot to keep track of. And there's not a real great centralized location to just know where everyone is. Teams are very inconsistent in updating their fall rosters, so it can be tricky to track it all and follow it.
Yeah, I think from a fan just for coaches and anyone in it, it's got to be hell. But from a fan perspective, I think it's got to be fun to watch. Like, it adds another layer and a huge layer of things to follow, and you can track your favorite players inevitably every year and every cycle. There are a ton of big name guys who enter the portal, whether it be for, you can kind of sift out who's doing it for draft leverage and almost disregard them. But even on the underclass, there are a number of big name guys who will hop in, and it's fun kind of seeing where they'll end up and all that. Like, I know as a fan of college football, I love following the portal and portal season and seeing where huge guys end up. So I can't imagine it's any different for, you know, a college baseball fan, which could be a naive way of looking at it, but I do think it adds a really fun wrinkle to it. And especially during the off season, it gives fans something to follow a little bit deeper into the summer.
Yeah. I wonder what the percentage of college baseball fans, like how many of those just have a team they follow and are very oriented in that team, the success. I imagine it's like a large, large majority, but how many are just like prospect hounds or just general college baseball fans where they're not necessarily in on one specific team, but they kind of just like to watch the sport as a whole. That definitely feels like more of something that, like, once you're really, you've been engrossed in the sport for years, maybe that happens. But for most of the fans of like SEC, ACC, big conference programs, the transfer portal has to just be great for them. But if you're a fan of mid-major teams, I can see you being maybe a little bit more annoyed with it.
Though, oh, yeah.
I have heard more and more. Remember, we talked about this a few podcasts ago, but I've heard more and more the idea that like there is a space for mid-majors to carve out a role for themselves as these like talent developing programs, where you can kind of be a pathway to these bigger schools and bigger conferences. And I think that is a really successful model that teams are going to have to develop.
Yeah, I think so too. I've yet to find the Mount St. Mary's tweet, but like, I swear it's real. So I know it'll be interesting to see, you know, if more schools adopt that mindset, because I do think it's a productive one. But yeah, I agree. I think it's horrible if you're in the game, but really fun if you're outside of the game, as far as the portal is concerned.
Yeah. Let us know if you guys have any strong thoughts on the transfer portal.
Sound off on the transfer portal in the comments or review section, wherever you're, wherever definitely. You're debating. And
along with that, like, I've also gotten some feedback that my audio has been a little bit low on the podcast, so I'm trying to replicate that. So if it's better this week, I'm trying. I don't know if it's like a post issue or an issue during the recording, but it does seem like both on this podcast with you, Peter, and with Ben, my levels are just a little bit lower. So I am aware of that, trying to improve that, because I know that can be annoying to listen to if it's really unbalanced. But anyways, let's get into some player talk. Peter, today I wanted to talk about a few of the top high school players in the class who are fascinating to me. And then we also had a few of the, I don't know what you'd call them, some of the 2024 eligibles who are now back and will be involved in the 2025 draft class. There are a handful of those players who are fascinating and are either going to be inside the top 100 or just going to miss the updated top 100 list. So plenty to talk about, as always, on the draft show. But I guess the first player I want to mention is Xavier Nyans. He's a third baseman out of Washington, high school player, 6'4", about 205 pounds, Oregon State commit. I remember the first time I saw Nyans, it was actually at last year's area code games. He was playing up, and my first look at him, I don't think I had realized at the time that he was a member of the 2025 class, and his batting practice was phenomenal. I think it was one of the better batting practice displays I saw on this Royals team. I was like, oh man, this kid's super physical. He's got a ton of power. He's got a ton of juice. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And then I look down to the roster and see that he's a member of the 2025 class. And I was simultaneously pissed and also even more impressed that he was a year younger and looked like he was perfectly fit in the 2024 class, like physically, tools wise. But yeah, he's been a guy who made an immediate first impression on me and had maybe an interesting summer. I know there were some tournaments where he really hit well. I think at a WWBA event, there were some scouts who were really impressed with his hitting there. And then later in the summer, I think area codes was maybe particularly emblematic of this. It was not a lot of balls in play. It was a lot of walks and a lot of strikeouts. So he just missed our summer performance team just because he didn't put the ball in play enough to really make that with some other players at his position that just did so well. But he's probably one of the more impressive power hitters in this class. I know Ben has said double plus raw power for him in the future. That wouldn't shock me at all. He's a really fascinating profile. I'm not sure, Peter, where this falls on our spectrum of like the profiles we tend to like, because I don't know that he has super discouraging swing and miss issues, because I do think he has an incredible batting eye. But basically, I just wanted to talk about him a little bit. I imagine he is one of the elite high school hitters in this class, based on the feedback I've gotten from scouts over the last few days and weeks talking with them. He's one of the first players mentioned at the top of the board. So I think he's in a good spot now, but I wanted to talk about his game a little bit, talk about the swing, get your thoughts on Nyans as a prospect, because he will be pretty prominently featured on our board.
Yeah, he's one of the prep guys that I've kind of become more familiarized with, at least early in the cycle, just because of how buzzy a name he is. I'm kind of with you, where it was this weird kind of blend of just walks and K's and not putting the ball in play at some of the more higher profile events, but there's a lot to like with him. And I think for me, at least, he's a little bit closer to like an Ethan Holiday type than he could be for others. Maybe I'm just a little bit lower on Ethan Holiday than others are, but I think the gap between him and Holiday is not very sizable. Like, he's more than looks the part when getting off the bus. Like, he's got a big league body. It's legit 6'4", 205 with physicality. It's plus power. The approach and swing decisions I thought were really good. But again, the contact ability and contact quality, especially in these higher profile events, was just like a little bit iffy. And he's definitely just third base only. So you know me and my college biases, but from a high school hitter standpoint, he's a guy that I'm really, really excited about. Him and Billy Carlson. Really, really like Billy. I know the defense is, you know, that's the real deal. But with Nyans, I think he's kind of on the outside looking in of that Holiday Hernandez tier, so to speak. But if you have him in there, I really don't have a gripe, because he's closer to being in there than he is out for me.
Yeah, no, I think I heard similar feedback from a scout just the other day who had them paired pretty similarly together, because if you think I mean, Ethan Holliday is a shortstop now. He has played a lot of third base on at some of these big events with Team USA. He was not playing shortstop for that team. Cason Cunningham was playing that position. But I think most people expect Ethan Holliday to move to third base. Some people think he might move to first base. If you view Xavier Nyans as having a similar profile, they have similar builds just physically, I think. They even have similar approach and miss concerns, where I don't think it's like massive swing and miss questions for either of these players. I think there is an idea that they both have pretty advanced approaches. They can get their A swing off in a number of different areas in the zone. They can handle velocity. For both these guys, it does seem like it's a case of like they are two of the more famous names in this high school class, and so they are getting the absolute best stuff from pitchers every time they step in the box. It's a situation where they're being thrown breaking balls in secondaries in hitters counts. They're getting full counts and they're being pitched really well and pitched backwards a lot. And I think for Nyan specifically, like, he seems perfectly content to just take his walks. I have just the synergy log games that he's had this year. So only 2024 games. It's a 387 pitch and 28 game sample. It's a 476 OBP, just a 10% chase rate. So that's pretty impressive. More walks than strikeouts overall. And I think for Nyans, if you see his swing synced up when it's looking good, it's a pretty beautiful swing. There was one home run he had in Cary for USA Baseball's trials, I believe.
Oh, that was insane.
Yeah, he gets himself into a 3-1 count, 93 mile per hour fastball that really just kind of catches too much of the middle of the plate. And the swing that Nyans unleashes here is just tremendous. It's probably one of the more aesthetically pleasing swings in the class when it's synced up. There's also just another same velocity, 93 miles per hour, a little bit further down and away in the zone, I believe at PG National, and he lets the ball travel and he drives it out to the left center gap to the opposite field. So I have no doubt that he's got a ton of power, got a ton of impact, can use the entire field for that power. And I'm just watching his highlights right now as I talk about him. When the swing looks good, it's really great. So I expect him to be kind of stuffed for most teams, just given the offensive upside. I do wonder what the disparity in hit tool evaluations is for Nyans across the scouting community. I could see some people maybe being a little bit more nitpicky with just the contact and the swing and miss, and maybe even their approach. I imagine there are some scouts that want him to be a little bit more aggressive at this level. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, sorry to interject, but that's the one thing I kind of wish that, at least just from my initial dive in on him, is if he was a little bit more aggressive earlier in counts. Like, it's impressive to see him, you know, get into deep counts and battle and draw these walks, especially against high quality stuff and high quality pitching. But I'd love for him to start to, you know, jump on some stuff early in counts, because that's where he's going to let this impressive raw skill set shine, of the physicality, the strength in his swing, the strong hands, and the ability to drive the baseball. So I think he's going to be able to do that, I think, with some more regularity if he just starts to, like, again, jump on some pitches early in counts.
Yeah, his swing rate overall is quite low. I mean, just in terms of, like, high school hitters, I don't know if I know how to contextualize it that much, but, like, a 28% swing rate is what I'm looking at right now, which would be, like, well below the like, lowest of qualified hitters in the majors. Again, like, really comparing apples to oranges there. I imagine there are a lot less balls that are thrown around or in the strike zone for Nyan, so it would make sense for it to be a little bit lower. But I am, now that we're talking about it, curious, like, how that rate compares to a lot of his peers in, like, the top 30, top 50 range. And if you just isolate for count as well, if you're looking at just 0-0 counts, so first pitch, he's only swinging a quarter of the time. I'm always inclined to kind of like patient hitters. I was a very patient hitter when I played. My dad used to always get pissed off at me because I would lead off and I would constantly take balls right down the plate for pitch one, and he'd be like, why are you not swinging at that? I'm like, the last thing I want to do is lead off a game swinging the first pitch and get an out. I feel like that's like the worst outcome for me potentially. So I'm not too concerned about that. Like, I think the fact that he has shown a really advanced eye is encouraging moving forward. But yeah, I guess I want to watch more of his ABs now and see, like, is he making bad takes? Like, is he passive or is he just patient and is being pitched around a lot? So I think there's a key difference between those two, but he is super fascinating.
Yeah, I'm happy you hit on that too, because there is a difference between being passive and being patient, because if you're being passive, you're letting one, two strikes go by. We're, you know, getting into these deep counts consistently when you could kind of avoid it, but patient, I mean, he's not going to swing at balls out of the zone or up at his neck or where, like, legit balls. So I think that is a key difference to to bring up, but nonetheless, he's a really impressive player, especially from an offensive standpoint, like you said, when it's all going. So I'd have him kind of have him right there with Holiday, at least for me. And I think I'm the low guy on Holiday. I'll probably get
generational hater, Peter. Wow.
I'll get my takes off as the cycle goes on, but I think I could be lower than most on him.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll have to talk about him a little bit more in depth on future podcasts. I'm sure we'll spend no shortage of time on Mr. Holiday.
Yeah, again, they're a really good player, but it's a fun debate up at the top.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's always just worth reiterating, for the guys at the very top, we get a lot more nitpicky, and it can sometimes come across as us being negative, but it's just the nature of when you're at the very top, your game gets picked apart more.
Oh, yeah.
We like all these players.
Nines will go in the first. Holiday will go in the first. Probably even both of them have, like, top 10 upside. Holiday is going to be in the 1-1 discussion right up until the end. We're just, like you said, when we get down to debating whether guys are going to go in the top 10 or the top 5, that's when you can kind of get a little, dive a little deeper and more nitpicky. But I'm really excited about this class as a whole, honestly. It might just be the newness of everything, and, like, we're turning over the page and a new leaf to the 25 class after spending what felt like a really long time on the 24 class, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think that you hit on that really well. And I think, just as a quick aside to talk about this class, I think both points you mentioned are great. Like, the newness of a draft class always makes it inherently more interesting, more exciting. You're learning about a lot of these players. There's a freshness where you haven't been talking about, like, Nick Kurtz injury history for the billionth time, or Chase Burns versus Hagan Smith for the billionth time. And I do think, in my conversations with scouts about this class overall, like, I find myself being more excited about the depth of this class than a year ago. Certainly the high school talent seems much better than last year. I know it's a low bar to compare it to, just given kind of how bad we were talking about last year's class being, but whereas a year ago, I was kind of stretching myself to get to 100 players I was excited about. Today, I was just thinking about how many players I'm going to have to leave off this top 100 who are exciting. I just think the class is at least average at this stage. I think a lot of it might depend on, like, the college hitting of the group. I do think, like, right now, the top end college hitters from a year ago are more exciting, but at the same time, like, a lot of those players in that top end college group took pretty significant steps forward that put them into that position. But in general, I really like this class quite a bit. And I think a part of it too is last year was the first year we were doing the podcast consistently throughout the year. So we spent a lot of time in the off season when nothing was really happening, going over these players and debating them and going back and forth. So maybe at this point in, like, February, March of next year, we'll be getting tired of the 25s, but I do think it's a better class.
I hope slash think not, but the one thing that I don't think will change about it is there isn't going to be a Connan or Bazana. I guess, depending on, you know, if you're just a draft Nick, you know, you could get really juiced up about a Lavalette, especially comparing to maybe like a Charlie Connan type, but there isn't, like, either of those two guys, at least right now, but it is a little bit more depthy when you look further down the board. Again, like, guys that we'll get into as the cycle goes on, but even players like Murph Gray, Henry Godbout.
The boring college players.
I was going to say, I'm going to rip off, like, five college guys, but there's a fun crop of college hitters as you look further down the board. So
it's also interesting too. I thought about this the other day. I know JJ mentioned this a lot, that, like, the impact talent at the top of any given draft is much more important than the quality of the depth. But I do think there is, like, this inherent bias for me, and I'm curious if it's for you, when you have to write a list of 500 players, the depth in your mind gets weighed a little bit more because you want to have exciting players to write about. I kind of bake in the fact that the players at the top are always going to be exciting. But when you're writing your 400th scouting report on the class, if you can have just a long list of depth that doesn't really taper off like last year's did, it definitely gives me more positive vibes about a given draft class.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, again, looking deep down these rankings, like, there are guys to be excited about, and like, mm-hmm. I've been excited writing about even into the 150, 200 range, you know, not to get too spoiler alerty, but even someone like a Cam Maldonado, who I think after the summer salvaged what was a difficult sophomore season at Northeastern, like, he, I think, is in a better spot arguably now heading into his junior year than he was after his true freshman year, in which he lit the world on fire at Northeastern. Bristol Carter, sophomore eligible guy, that's a really interesting one, who transferred from East Carolina to Auburn. Grant Cunningham at Texas A&M, he could be, keep an eye on him as kind of a helium-ish type arm as we just get further along here, especially once the season starts. Again, we could keep going. Like, Kane Kepley mm-hmm. right now, he will be, you'll see him on our rankings and talked about a lot, especially, at least for me, he's almost like a borderline cheese ball type guy.
There you go.
At least right now, but we're kind of going on a rant, but it does speak to how much of a fan I am of this crop as a whole, mm-hmm. At least early on. So
we're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed, because Indeed makes hiring easy and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up, it's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. 1 stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true for even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's BADLANDSFOOD.com/baseball.
Yeah, last year I always remember like struggling to find personal cheese balls. This year I don't think that'll be a problem for me at all.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have an episode on our personal cheese balls and sleeper picks or something like that. But anyways, there's a couple other prominent high school players I wanted to mention on this podcast. The next one is Cruz Schoolcraft, who in my mind fits in this sort of like Spencer Jones, Bryce Eldridge phylum of prospect. He's a two-way guy, left-handed pitcher and first baseman. He has a lot of power in the bat. He's 6'8", 215 pounds. Another high school player on the West Coast. He's an Oregon product. I think he's still uncommitted. I don't know if he was previously committed, but we have him listed right now as uncommitted. I'll check really quickly to make sure that's still the case. But he has gotten a ton of buzz. Scouts are really excited about him. Yeah, he is still uncommitted as we're talking right now on this podcast. I think he's going to be more of a pitching prospect for a lot of scouts, just given what he did this year. I heard from one scout who said he viewed him more as like a Cam Caminiti two-way player, where like he's clearly better on the mound and just has a lot of raw power as a lefty bat. I'm curious like how many other scouts maybe view him as a more legitimate hitting prospect. But either way, this summer he has sat 93, 94, been up to 97 from the left side. Again, as a 6'8" southpaw, that immediately will get your name out there and you'll get a lot of attention. But I think that he's also shown some pretty impressive secondaries. He uses the changeup as often or more than a low 80s slider. I think he has pretty good feel for that pitch. I think it has a chance to be an above average pitch. He's added more power to that low 80s slider, which is kind of this sweepy breaking ball that just could round out the arsenal really nicely for him. And then it's like this lower three-quarter slot from a super lanky, super tall kid. I don't have his extension numbers right now, but I would imagine they're quite a bit above average just given the length and given how he kind of works on the mound. So just the fact that everything I would think is going to play up from that slot and that delivery on top of just the pure stuff being really solid, I think has him pretty safely in the first round for most scouts at this point. And right now he's the top ranked left-handed pitcher from the high school class. Just got monstrous upside. You don't see, I say this, but I guess we could name a couple of 6'7", 6'8" pitchers, but like 6'8" left-handed throwing a fastball like that. He was really impressive at the area code games. Just pulling that up really quickly. He faced seven batters, struck out four, walked one, averaged 94 miles per hour, got five misses with the fastball, two whiffs with the changeup. It's a pretty compelling overall pitching prospect. And then again, you also have the two-way factor, whether that's you liking him as a two-way player or because you think there's just more that'll be unlocked once he focuses on pitching. But he's pretty good, and he's going to be stuffed pretty good on our update as well.
Yeah, hot take. I'm a fan of the 6'8 lefty that's been up to 97. Again,
it's a hard profile to fall in love with, isn't it?
I think if all else fails on the mound, which I don't see that happening, I mean, you can't take this kid off the mound and have him hit. I know he'll hit and hit probably really well for his high school team this spring, but like it's pitcher all the way. And like there is some stuff I think to, you know, you can iron it out a little bit, but the clay that you have to mold here is really, really impressive. Like you said, he's sitting in the low to mid nines. He was up to 97 in the extension. At least I saw it. It's somewhere, so I can't speak to the validity of it. I think I just saw a tweet about it, but it was over 7 feet of extension.
Yeah, which would be well above average.
Which is, yes, exactly. It's well above average. Like, he's releasing it. I'm speaking hyperbolically, but like, he's releasing it, like, you know, in the batter's box, and it's getting mm-hmm. it's the 93 to 96 touching seven is going to play up even more.
Yeah. And I was looking at, because he's about to debut tonight as we're recording it, so it's on the mind, but Lance Brozdowski had a good breakdown of Kumar Rocker, and he was talking about kind of both his extension and the fact that he also has, he gets like releases pretty far to the third base side. I would imagine that's the case for Schoolcraft as well. Like, he has the combination of extension down the mound, and then the angle he creates by getting towards the first base side is just probably a really tough combination of angle for hitters without even factoring in how good the pure stuff is.
Yeah, and I'm actually really excited too about the secondaries that he's got in his back pocket. Like, the slider I know has progressed really well as he's just continued to get older and get a little bit, you know, more polished in that aspect. And I think that, you know, I know it was sharper this summer. I think that's got a real chance to be a legit outpitch for him. And then I know his changeup as well in the mid-80s. That's also another potentially above average type of offering. And then the clay that you have here is undeniable. I think right now you're looking at a definite first round type of arm, at least that kind of upside, assuming mm-hmm. nothing goes haywire. But I mean, this is a guy that's top yeah. half of the first round, depending on how he does. And I think that once he gets even more feel for his body and kind of grows into it a little bit and can tighten up the delivery and polish that out, there's some more in there. I think velo wise, I think this is a guy that'll be sitting mid to upper mm-hmm. nines, pushing triple digits sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and just comparing him to Cam Caminiti, who was a top high school pitcher in last year's class, I think that relative to the other players in the class, he's probably at a better point on the board now compared to Caminiti. And I think just in terms of like Caminiti's one weakness being the questionable field to spin the ball, I mean, I don't know that we're talking about like a double plus breaking ball with Schoolcraft by any means, but I do think that at least I have a lot more confidence in his ability to spin the ball. I think the progress he's shown with that pitch this summer has been pretty compelling for a lot of scouts as well. So I just think he's a fairly complete pitching prospect who has a lot of skills, or has a lot of traits, I should say, that you can't teach between just the size and the handedness, which is exciting.
Yeah.
One other high school pitcher I wanted to mention, because it sounds like he's really blowing up this summer, did not enter the year really high on any of our specific boards, but has gotten really loud feedback. Another high school left-handed pitcher. This one is Cameron Appenzeller out of Illinois. He is a 6'5", 180-pound left-hander committed to South Carolina. He is a guy who in the last few days and weeks, again, in these scout combos, has gotten a ton of really good feedback. It is not the same sort of present pure stuff or the same sort of physicality that Schoolcraft has, but I think he has a chance to already be the second best high school left-handed pitcher on the board, which is more of a question of like where specifically he's going to fall. But he was another pitcher that had a really, really loud area code games performance at that event. I think he was sitting in the low 90s with the fastball. What really excites me about Appenzeller is just the body. I think you can project a lot of strength gains moving forward for him, or at least I hope you can. I will say he's like extremely thin, very lean. The first time I saw him, I thought of like Dayson Hill from last year's draft class, Texas left-handed pitcher who was super, super skinny and then took a big step forward in the spring. I think Appenzeller right now is ahead of where Dayson Hill was at the same time a year ago, but it's a fastball that's been up to 94, sitting around 90 more consistently. And I really like the slider with him. It's like this upper 70s, low 80s breaking ball that really has a ton of bite, a lot of teeth as it approaches the plate. It's got a little bit more tilt, I think, than Schoolcraft's breaking ball. And so I would be more bullish on projecting that pitch forward as he gains strength and adds a little bit more power to it. But he's another pitcher who throws with maybe a little bit of a tough angle. He gets lower three quarters at times. You definitely have to project more on him, just given the current velocity and physicality he has, but scouts love to project on players, and this does look like a body that can add a ton of weight if he is one of those players who can't add weight. I wonder if there are going to be questions about like how much is he going to add. Is it like a Michael Mercado or a Braden Shoemake sort of frame who just always stays really lean? But I definitely wanted to at least mention him because I think he's going to be a player who nationally is getting a lot more attention given what he's done this summer.
Yeah, and just looking at him in some of the video I've seen on Synergy, at least from this chair, it does look like he is a guy that you can add 10, 15, maybe a little bit more pounds to, and I think that makes it all the more tantalizing, the upside he has. Again, it's 6'5", super projectable lefty. It's an easy delivery on the mound. I think the body control is actually pretty good for Appenzeller. Like, directionally, I thought he was pretty good. He falls off a little bit towards the third base side, but easy low 90s up to 95 with his fastball. And like you, I was probably most impressed with the slider. It's sharp with two-plane break. It's going to be probably his go-to secondary offering. And I think it's a combination of now stuff that you've got with him, but also the excitement with the projectability factor. It's another left-hander. I think he's a solid strike thrower. There's some pitchability there, and I think everything is just going to tick all the way up, especially the stuff and the velo is going to round into form when you do add this physicality to him. So between Schoolcraft and Appenzeller, Seth Hernandez, obviously, a couple others, there are some prep arms that you can get really fired up about towards the top of the class, and that's not even including the tier one of college arms of Bremner and Arnold, and then soon thereafter you've got guys like Matt Scott and Kyson Witherspoon. So there's some fun arm talent. But yeah, I with Appenzeller, there's so much to like, and I think is not gonna call my shot because it's not even really a hot take at all, and he's kind of already you can talk about him in this breath, but I wouldn't be shocked if as the spring goes on he ends up being a popular big time helium guy that ends up being popped in the first round. Like, I think he's got that type of upside, and it's a profile that you can pretty easily fall in love with. Like, I'm not sitting here forcing myself to like a lot about it. It's just, you know, there's so much to already be a fan of.
Yeah. If this guy has a really strong off season where he puts on good weight and just gets a little more mass on the frame, I could see him just taking a huge step forward next spring. And like you said, there's already plenty to really like about him. So, that's all I had for high school players today. I will say all three of the players we talked about, it seems like it's always the case for baseball players, but these guys all have plus or better names. Xavier Nyans, Cruz Schoolcraft, Cameron Appenzeller. There is something about baseball players where none of them just have very normal, boring names.
Oh, having a good baseball name is awesome. Like, whether it be with my dad or my little brothers and we're watching any sport, whether it be like football, like, an awesome name adds to everything. We were watching always talk about BC, but we were watching BC in week one, and they have a running back named Turbo Richard. Like, if you're a running
amazing
and your name is Turbo, like, that it doesn't get any better. But yeah, if you're
just push the overall OFP up a few points after
I think he's like third on their depth chart. But like, if your name is Cruz, like, that's just so sick. And then Appenzeller is an awesome last name as well.
1000%. All right, Peter, you got any college guys you want to talk through today?
Yeah, we can dive into them a little further as we keep going on, because I know that we talked about them throughout the 24 cycle because they weren't totally unknowns, and this quartet was honestly, at least towards the end, or maybe not all at once, but they were all top five round guys. I'm just curious to see what's going to happen with the Prager, Flores, Shelton, Didowick group. I think of the four, I'm probably most excited.
Just lay out there. So
yeah,
their full names and schools for people that maybe didn't follow all of last year.
Yeah, great call. So Ryan Prager, Texas A&M left-hander, was out in 2023 recovering from Tommy John surgery, came back last year and lit the world on fire for the Aggies, was one of their most reliable arms, if not their most reliable arms, tore up the SEC, was actually drafted in the third round this year by the Los Angeles Angels. And he decided not to sign and return to school, which was, I think, the most notable of these four, because he was the only one that was actually drafted in a range in which you would expect him to sign. And then with Flores, bounced back, kind of came into his own at Texas, put up a career year. Didn't quite get the money that he wanted. Colby Shelton had a solid year, I'd say, for Florida. Never quite got going, but the power numbers were still rather impressive for Colby Shelton. Positionally, I'm not quite sure where he fits. I think he was drafted in the 19th or 20th round and then understandably opted not to sign and return to school.
Yeah, we had him ranked, just for reference, in top 100 of last year's class. So,
yeah. And then Harrison Didowick, another sophomore eligible player, like actually all of them, except for Prager, was really, really productive at UVA. He was a guy that, not to pat myself on the back, but I, in the top 25 previews last year, we have to give a player to know, and I had Didowick as a player to know.
Good call.
And he had a career year for UVA explode. He had over 290 with 23 jacks, 68 RBIs, swiped 14 bags. I think with Didowick, of this group, even though with Prager, he's again probably a really safe bet to go on day one somewhere or early.
Well, here's the thing with Prager that's interesting to me. Like, I think all of the other three, all of the hitters, I think probably have a lot more opportunity to move up boards, just through a combination of like the fact that they were draft eligible sophomores and young for the class. And now they won't be like too far. I don't believe they'll be too far out of place age wise. I could be wrong here, but I think all these guys, if they have strong seasons, they can improve their stock. Even guys like Jalen Flores, who numbers wise was really good, I think there are some real questions about how he hits that he could improve upon, and improve defensively. Like, there's still room for him to improve. But with Ryan Prager, I mean, how much more do you think he can move up the board? Because at this point, he's going to be 22.7 on draft day next year. He's coming off an excellent, excellent 2024 season. I'm not sure that he can pitch much better than he did last year. Like, he can, I suppose, but it'd be hard to like expect him to pitch much better than a 2.95 ERA over 19 starts, 97.2 innings, 31.2% strikeout rate, 5% walk rate. I would probably take the over on all those statistical categories this year, just given like the expected regression I would expect for him. And he already, like, I thought he was going to go day one this past year and didn't. So I just wonder, like, how much more room does he have to improve his stock this year? I think it'll be threading a really thin needle for him to move up higher. Whereas with the other guys, I think there are parts of their games that are like more clearly question marks that if they improve, I could see them jumping up a little bit more. But maybe you think differently.
Yeah, and like, that's not even a knock on Prager with taking the over on all these stats. Like you said, it's going to be really hard to get better in any of these areas that he did. And like, walked only 20 guys, struck out 124. The ERA was sub 3. I don't want to cap a kid's ceiling and cap where he could go, because I think that's excuse me, a really naive way of looking at it. But in just looking up and down the board, I don't know. I'm with you where it feels like, and it'll get more nuanced as the bonus picture comes into view, and his dollar amount will obviously be a little bit lower than what it was last year. Maybe it'll be on par. But nonetheless, yeah, I think it's the second to third round type of arm. And that's what he was last year after doing what he did. So I guess like establishing a track record of that could play in his favor and maybe have him closer to the first half of the second round than what it was last year. Was like later ish day one, like 2 to 4 round type. But yeah, I'm with you. For me, it's, he'll kind of perpetually be in the second and third round range. I think he is who he is as a pitcher at this point. I think that the strike throwing is really appealing. You have a left-handed starter. I think that there is a little bit of stuff there, but it's by any means not really loud. Like, I think he could be a really effective, like, back half of the rotation type of guy, eventually a good quality number four starter, but he's not a guy that I'm going to reach for.
Yeah. Which of these hitters would you be most bullish on?
Didowick.
Coming into Didowick. I think he's the one that excites me the most too, just because I'm more intrigued by the athlete. And I think my questions about both Flores and Shelton are more obvious maybe than what my questions are with Didowick. Like, there is some swing and miss in the game, but I kind of like a lot of his profile. I'd be much more excited about him having like a really strong year and shooting up boards, because I think there's just like the underlying athlete foundation there is really appealing to me.
Yeah, and this will be talking about it in this breath. I don't know if you can describe it necessarily as like a bold statement or a hot take, but like, unless you're picking 1-1 or 1-2 or 1-3, you're gonna miss out on Lavalette unless everything just goes completely haywire.
Yeah, I mean, we could have. I wouldn't go that far, just because last year we probably would have been saying the same thing about Weatherholt and Kurtz, and whether here Weatherholt is at, available at 7.
So. Yeah, that's true. Unless you're picking, let's say, inside the top 12 picks, and you out on Lavalette, I would be thrilled with getting Harrison Didowick with my second pick. Like, I think that the profile is really, really intriguing. Like, it's plus power to the pull side. And I think that you hit on a key point, which is the athlete. Like, he can really go and get it in center.
Do we know if he's going to play center? Yeah. Is he going to play center field?
He's going to get it, at least just in looking at him and watching how he moves out there. He's going to
He played 28 games there last year. I didn't realize he'd played that many, I suppose.
I think he's going to get a chance to prove himself and try and stick there in pro ball. Like, he has long, gazelle-like strides. The instincts, I think, are improving slash hopefully will continue to improve. Like, he can cover a ton of ground in either gap, and he just kind of glides out there. Like, it's impressive to watch. And then at the plate, it's plus power borderline to the pull side. I think that the one thing that I'll want to look out for is how the hit tool improves, if it does improve this year. I think it was just okay, just from a hitability standpoint. I think, like a lot of college hitters and hitters in general, he struggles picking up secondary stuff. There was some chase, there was a whole lot of miss. I think that the book on him is to just kind of spin him to death, and you'll get whiffs and swing and miss, and it shows. But yeah, I think from a tool standpoint, there's a lot to like, both now and then you can dream on it a little, And he's also an effective base stealer. Like, he's a definitely he's an above average runner, and he can, he's good for 10 to 15 stolen bases. So I'd probably say, in terms of ceiling wise and bullishness, it's hard to not like Didowick the most, maybe of all four, definitely of the hitters, but probably of all four, at least for me.
Yeah. I feel like I like Ryan Prager better than the industry, just because, again, I expected him to be a second rounder, but yeah, I'd probably would agree with you there with Didowick. But I think that's all we had for today's episode. Peter, I'll give you a chance to quickly plug anything, if you have anything to plug before we get out of here. But yeah, we're going to be doing this weekly. So if you guys enjoyed the podcast last year, like kind of an off season for college and draft, we'll be breaking down as many as we can, just so ahead of the season, we can get you guys at least what we think about these players. You'll know, maybe you'll disagree with us on everything, but that's fine too. Let us know.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, we'll be doing it weekly, which I couldn't be more excited about. So if you have stuff that you want to hear about or have questions, DM at my DMs. Yeah. And so feel free.
Yeah. If you have any like hot takes on players, if you guys are like, I really like this player better than where you guys have him, please let us know. I think that stuff's really, really fun to talk about and really interesting.
Yeah. 1,000%. I love to chop it up with whoever it is. And if you have any players you want discussed or any of that, just say the word. So, the draft podcast will be weekly, released every Friday. And then outside of that, I mentioned the transfer portal content next week. We've got a productive draft update for this class, the 25 class, and then looking a little bit further down the pike in a couple of weeks, it'll be all recruiting stuff. So I think it's going to be the top 10, maybe even a little bit more built out recruiting classes. And then kind of similar to the trajectory the transfer portal stuff was on, there'll be underrated classes, a couple of the classes that just missed the ranking, however many it ends up being. So a lot of fun stuff to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Thank you for supporting Baseball America. If you do, it's much appreciated. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours.
Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.